Hey guys, we're back for our second episode of Outside the Octagon. We want to thank everyone that downloaded and listened to our first episode. Really appreciate the support on this journey. Today we're just going to talk about our upcoming fights, our mindsets going into them, and everything that involves the lifestyle of a fighter. Hope you enjoy. Great start.
Sorry, we're going to have to cut that out.
It's still live. We're still good.
How you been, though, man?
It's been pretty a minute. Good, man. It has been a little bit. It's been a few weeks since I've been down here. Just trying to really get back into it, start training hard again. What about you?
About the same. Just hanging out in between fight camps, going on trips, not doing shit.
Yeah, where you been going? I seen you've been taking a few trips.
I went up to Columbia for the wrestling tournament, the state wrestling tournament, and then I'll go to Vegas this weekend before I start my hard cut and everything. That's pretty much it. After my last fight, a bunch of us went over to the casinos, hung out, and gambled my winnings away.
You going to do that in Vegas this weekend, too?
Yeah, there's a good chance. Just a lot of drinking, a lot of gambling.
Yeah, so
it's Dylan Edwards' birthday, so we're all going to go out and party out there.
Oh, awesome. How long are you going to be out there?
Just the weekend. Yeah, we come back Monday evening, so not too long. We don't get to do anything too crazy out there.
Yeah. You said you'll be drinking, though. How often do you, how far before your fights do you usually, stop drinking and really dial in your diet and stuff?
About 6 to 7 weeks. But we planned this trip back in, December before everything started.
So you're making an exception.
Yeah, there were supposed to be fights. The fights were supposed to be earlier this March, and then by the time they got everything scheduled and it ended up being April 20th instead. So, yeah, I'll make a little exception. I'll still have right at 6 weeks when I get back. Right. So it's not a huge exception.
Man, that's the fight game. Always changing dates, moving shows around, getting your fights moved. I know I was supposed to fight on the 20th, but my opponent couldn't do that. So now I'm fighting on May 11th.
That's sick. When do you fight when do you start your fight camp?
Really, I've just been trying to get back into it now. I'm actually getting a personal trainer to handle all my strength and conditioning and starting that next week. So that's one less thing I have to think about this fight camp. I'm really looking forward to that. Usually I do all my own strength and conditioning, and it just takes a lot mentally that I have to put into it. So that's real nice. But really, I've just been trying to train consistently and get back into it. I've been sick this last week, and it's been killing me.
So since you've been out so long, how's your mindset feel like going into this? Are you nervous about this fight? Because it's been, a year now since you've
Yeah, it's been about a year. It'll be over a year by the time I do get back in the cage. It's hard being off, but there was a lot of time where I didn't train. Or only trained every once in a while. So, that's a little nerve-wracking, but really, I never stop learning. Yep. I'm always watching videos, working on things in my mind, visualizing, and I think, even if your body's not doing it, if you're keeping your mind active, then your body will follow suit really quickly once you get back into things.
Definitely.
Because if your mind's there and it's right, then you start training again and everything just seems to click. So, I think, really, I'm going to be okay going into this one. I think I'll be better than I've ever been before. I got new motivation. I'm a dad. I'm doing this for a whole new purpose now.
Last amateur fight, right?
Yeah, hoping so. If I win this fight, then I'm hoping to look for a pro fight after that, start getting paid, and stop getting punched in the head for no money,
No more free CTE.
Yeah, CTE, that's a good topic to talk about. That's something that's been all over the media these days, especially with the football, but, combat sport athletes were, number one there for CTE and brain injuries and whatnot. And so what makes fighting worth it for you with all that being said?
To be honest, I really don't have a good excuse for it. I've thought about this a lot over time, and I don't have a legit reason. I just love the sport, and I see the beauty in it, and it's fun. Of course, it's a good workout, but it's just a blast for me, and I love the concept of fighting. Why would you do it if there's all this possibility?
I just see it as risk and reward, and that's a risk I'm willing to take for the reward that I get from it.
Yep.
Stepping in the cages, it gets me in a mindset that I can't find doing anything else. You're so focused and so in the moment because that you're about to get in the cage with somebody that's trying to hurt you.
And absolutely.
It's either you take them out or they're taking you out. There's no room for, you know, thinking about what the fight that you and your girlfriend had the other day, or trying to pay your bills, or, you know, just different things like that. You know, the everyday stresses of life, they all go away.
Yep.
When you step in that cage, there's nothing else that you're thinking about. There's nothing else in front of you except for that very moment. And that's what's really beautiful to me. And, you know, then when you get your hand raised, it's...
There's no better feeling.
No better feeling. It's the best feeling. Like, it's the best drug you could ever ask for. And you work so hard. You train for so many weeks just to fight for at most 15 minutes. And mm-hmm. that's crazy in and of itself. But it's just so rewarding. And even when you do take a loss, it's hard. It's, you know, the highs are super high and the lows are super low.
Yep, because you do put so much into it over time. Yeah, you train for one moment and it's brutal when you take a loss.
Right, and, you know, there's only two guys in there. It's you or the other guy. Somebody's got to lose.
Yeah.
But that's part of it, and that's part of growing as a fighter, is dealing with those losses. And, you know, that's been something that I've been dealing with since my last fight. You know, not only have I taken the time off that I did because of moving and being a new dad and everything else like that, but I'm coming off a loss. So that's another thing that I'm dealing with as far as my mindset goes. But really, I just look back, reflect, figure out what, you know, what I need to do better, what things I need to change, and how I need to approach this next fight. You know, now I'm training at a new gym. Been working a lot on my striking, on my stand-up. I think I'm really rounding out my game. I've been wrestling a lot too, training with some high-level wrestlers, and I think it's really just all coming together. You know, I used to rely on my jiu-jitsu a lot and being tough, going there rock'em sock'em robot style, but really not trying to do that this fight, trying to be technical and actually showcase all the skills that I have, and I think everybody will be surprised to see I'm going to go in there and run through this dude.
That's fantastic. That's May 11th in Pittsburgh, Kansas, right?
Yep.
Cool.
Yeah. I'll be there. Walkout FC. 135
I might actually be in your corner.
Yeah, hey. I'd love for you to be in my corner, man. You know me better than anybody else.
Yeah. Watching, speaking of knowing you better than anyone else, I was there in your corner for the last loss, and that was, it's just as tough taking a loss as it is watching one of your best friends in the corner when you can't do anything to help them out, taking a beating. It wasn't fun to be there for that.
Hey man, I survived most of that, and you know, I fought.
You did. You fought harder, and I still thought you were gonna somehow pull it out, even until the ref stopped it. But it doesn't change how hard it was to watch.
Oh, it's personally, you know, I've been in your corner too, and I think it's harder to be in the corner than it is to be in the fight.
I can see that.
Because you can actually, you know, when you're in the fight, you can control the outcome. When you're in the corner, you're giving advice and everything, but you have no real control of how the fight goes.
Mm-hmm.
So I oftentimes get more nervous for that than I do when, you know, when I'm fighting. Like just the other day, my buddy Mario Sanchez, he had his first boxing match. He just got into it not too long ago, and he had his first match, and I was in his corner, and that was one thing I realized, like, wow, I felt those nerves again, those
Definitely.
Nerves that I haven't felt in a while, but it felt like I was fighting, kind of, because, you know, when one of your good friends is getting in there, it's just like you're getting in there, and there's
yep.
still all of those emotions that you're dealing with, so.
Yeah, well, even if they're not a good friend, you still kind of feel those feelings. I was in Cape Girardeau for Alex Borden's fight a couple weeks ago, and we're teammates, but I wouldn't say we're great friends or anything, and I started getting nerves before his fight. So just being that close and in that environment, it throws you back into the nerves, and the highs and the lows come, and the waves of nerves, I guess, is all the fighters like to say.
Yeah, man, especially when it's your teammate, like, no matter, you know, it doesn't matter what your relationship is outside the gym, but once you get in the gym, you know, they are like your family because you're training with them all the time, so, you know, watching any of your teammates fight, that's always a little bit tough. I don't think people realize, you know, most people go to fights and they're there to enjoy the experience, and
they just see two guys,
about
they
the
don't
fights
see.
And they love it, you know, but when you have either yourself or one of your teammates or somebody you know fighting, it changes the whole dynamic of the way that you see the fight.
Yep, definitely. going back to what you were saying a little bit ago about when you fight, you're in the moment and in the cage and stuff. There's a big topic going around about how jiu-jitsu and martial arts will help with depression and anxiety and stuff like that. And one of the reasons is because it doesn't allow you to overthink. You have to live in the moment without getting, I guess, too personal. I know you've dealt with anxiety and stuff like that. Do you credit jiu-jitsu for helping you get through that?
Well, yeah, that's one thing that a lot of people don't know about me is I've dealt with anxiety and depression for quite some time now, several mm-hmm. years. You know, I have a pretty good hold on it now, but it's still one of those things that, you know, it can bring me down. But I think jiu-jitsu and martial arts in general have really helped me, you know, not only with my mental toughness, mm-hmm. but like you were saying, you know, when you get on the mats, even if you're not fighting, when you go to the gym and you're going to train, you once you get on the mats, you stop thinking about everything else that's going on in your life.
Yep.
And for that hour, hour and a half, 2 hours, you get to be in the moment. And I think that's really what everybody wants out of life in general, no matter what you're doing, whether you're at work, whether you're hanging out with your friends, whether you're training or whatever. Like, you want to be in the moment, right? You don't want to think about the past. You don't want right. to think about the future. Well, jiu-jitsu, being that it's so intense, it's so intricate, it's so beautiful, it doesn't allow you to think about the past or the future, so you have to be in the moment. And that's a really great thing, and I think overall it's really helped me, and I think it could help a lot of other people too. And like with that, you know, after you do any type of physical activity, you get kind of, you know, what people call the runner's high.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's even better when you do jiu-jitsu because it's way more intense.
Yeah.
You're using your full body. So afterwards, you feel good. You know, even if your body's a little bit, you know, quote-unquote broken and worn out,
mm-hmm.
like mentally, I've never gone to a jiu-jitsu or MMA class and regretted it after. There's been plenty right. of times where I haven't wanted to go, and I've had to force myself to go, and just been like, man, I don't feel like training today, or like, I just don't feel like, you know, getting beat up or whatever. But you swallow your pride, you go to practice, you do it, and afterwards you always feel good. There's like, even when you do get beat up, even when you have a hard day, you know, like, well, at least it happened in the gym and not on the fights, and you just, you have that overall, like, I feel like I'm glowing after practice. My
yeah.
body releases all the crap, all the bullshit, and I'm just, you know, in a good mindset. But it also takes a good mindset to be able to get yourself there.
Yeah.
People always talk about having the motivation, or where do you get the motivation? It's like, well, don't always have motivation. You gotta stay disciplined.
Yep.
And that's easier said than done, but man, like I said, I think the motivating things are knowing that what you're going to get out of it is going to be way better than the, you know, the simple pleasures that you'll get from sleeping, you know, taking a nap instead of going to training or going
yeah.
to eat or doing whatever. Whatever you're going to do, knowing that if you go to training, you're going to feel better, more accomplished, have a sense of, like, pride about yourself because you went, because you did that, rather than whatever excuse that you wanted to use not to go.
I was going to ask how you find the motivation on days you don't want to. What do you tell yourself? But you kind of answered it on your own there.
Oh, man, you just got to tell yourself, like, I know, obviously, you want to have a positive relationship mm-hmm. with training, so you want it to be fun. You want it to be something that you enjoy going to. And for the most part, I feel that way. But, man, when you're in a hard, like, fight camp and you're training multiple times a day and you're worn out and you're beat up and you know that you just need to get in the gym and keep training, you just got to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even when, like, you got to find a way to force yourself to do it. Know that your end goal is better than whatever bullshit you're going to do in that meantime that you're going to use as an excuse.
Okay, so on days when you really don't want to and it's not a fight camp, how do you battle that? Because I have issues with, I shouldn't say I don't go, but it's easier to find excuses when I know that in 6 weeks there's not someone trying to rip my head off. There's not.
Well, yeah, man, I think excuses are way
I think
easier.
A lot of people are that way, though, especially because yeah. I'm about to go through a six-week fight camp where yeah. I practice four times a day.
Yeah.
And so at the end, I do just need a couple days. And that's why I like to take vacations. That's,
yeah.
that's why I do the things I do. But I was just curious how you...
No, you know, sometimes I allow myself to, you know, use those excuses, and that happens. And you just gotta, next time...
I tell myself the recovery days.
Yeah, yeah. I'd be like, oh, this is a rest day. Yeah. But no, usually, even if I do that, that's what goes back to having that positive relationship. Like, if I really don't want to train on some days and I don't have a fight coming up, honestly, some days I don't train.
Yeah,
same. And that, mentally, that's fine with me because I don't feel guilty. The worst thing is, like, not going to training, using an excuse, but then feeling guilty about it, because then that increases your anxiety and makes everything worse. But if you're able to know, like, hey, I'm not training for a fight, my body's a little beat up, and, you know, I'm really just not feeling it today, sometimes that's okay. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you got to allow yourself to go do other things.
But a mental recovery day is just as important, in my opinion.
But on those days, I will say, I try to do something. Like, I try to do some type of movement, whether it's going for a hike, doing a light workout, you know, even just sitting in the sauna, doing something that will help my mindset and, you know, help me get moving, get some exercise, and just do something. Like, you can make as many excuses as you want, and at a certain point, you can't let yourself make any more excuses. But some days, hey, if... you know, you need an off day, you need to take a day off, then by all means, do it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I try to always stay active, too. If I know I'm not going to practice, it'll be because I'm going to do something active or I'm trying to get outdoors. But sometimes it is just as important to go hang out with family or friends.
Yeah.
Take your girlfriend on a date.
It's the thing is, like, you know, when we are in fight camps, we're training so hard that we're sacrificing so much time that, you know, away from our families, away from our friends, and so many things that we spend so much time in the gym. So when we don't have a fight coming up, then, yeah, we want to train consistently, but we also got to allow ourselves to live our life.
Yeah.
And that keeps you grounded and keeps you sane to where when you do go into fight camps, you're willing to put it all in there, go all in, because you know, hey, when I get out of this fight camp, I'll be able to take a little time with my family. Not too much time, you know.
Of course.
You gotta know when to push yourself and when to get over it and conquer your inner bitch, as Joe Rogan would say, and just do it. But there's also times where you do need time away, and I think that also helps keep the passion there, because if you're just grinding and grinding and grinding and grinding, not only are you going to be physically fatigued, but you're going to be mentally fatigued too. And if you don't love what you do, then why are you doing it? So I Definitely. Think it just keeps us sane.
So speaking of physical fatigue, we all know that I'm probably the most injury prone human being in Missouri.
You and I both, man.
It's terrible. What do you do to recover? For those of you that don't know, I ask Corey Beck about everything that I take because he's one of the smartest human beings I've ever met. So, give me some supplements. Like, what do you take? What helps you recover?
The big thing, as you know already, is CBD, man.
And definitely.
You
I know, do that. I use CBD.
You know, I've been on the CBD train for years. Mm-hmm. And I think personally, I'm more of a fan of full spectrum CBD. So if, you know, you don't know, there's CBD isolate, there's full spectrum CBD. Basically, the difference is in CBD isolate, you're getting only CBD. That's the only cannabinoid you're getting. In a full spectrum hemp extract, you're not only getting CBD, but you're getting other cannabinoids like CBG, CBN, and, you know, minuscule amounts of THC, which obviously if it's extracted from hemp, it's going to be less than 3%. So it's still legal and still perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm.
The beauty of the hemp extracts, especially, you know, is they have an entourage effect. So the different cannabinoids work better together and you get a more positive benefit from it. So
this is why I ask you.
Yeah, but there's a lot to know about the whole CBD industry, man. It's new. It's a booming industry. Everybody's getting into it. And some, like, man, I've taken a deep dive into trying to learn all I can about it. But either way, CBD is a beautiful thing. I use anything from, like, cooling creams to rub on localized areas where I have pain, to capsules. Right now I'm using a company called Natural Stacks. They just came out with full spectrum CBD capsules that they use omega-3 fish oil as the carrier oil. So it's super beneficial for fighting inflammation. And they actually have one that's specifically designed for sleep too. It's they have CBD, a little bit of melatonin, and then also lavender essential oils to promote sleep. I've been taking that before bed and sleeping like a baby, even nice. Though that's really not a super accurate thing because babies don't always sleep through the night. I don't know why people say that.
Yeah.
But anyways, you know, other than CBD, man, I've been, you know, there's other supplements you can use. Just making sure you get your vitamins.
Mm-hmm.
I use other supplements to help my brain health. Different nootropics and things like that. But a big thing I've been using is my Theragun. It's a percussion massager. Mm-hmm. And just making sure that I'm working out all the tightness in my muscles, all the knots after training. I've really been trying to stretch more. That's something I neglected for the longest time. Every day after practice, I get in the sauna and I stretch. Finally been able to get back in the sauna because
nice.
I had some PTSD from cutting weight in there.
Same, yeah.
But now I do it for fun. You know, it seems crazy, but it's real. And I've been stretching in there, and that helps. And really just knowing my body, knowing like, hey, when I do need to take a day off or mm-hmm. when I need to drill instead of go live and
yep.
different things like that. So other than that, are there any other things that you do to help recover?
I use CBD too, but I have a hot tub at my house, so I try to use that a couple times a week, and it really, really helps. But I also have a massage therapist that's actually I get to meet with a couple times a week, and she rubs out any knots, or she's really good about preventing injury. Her name's Jessie Ostergaard, and she is phenomenal. Like I said, I meet with her a couple times a week, and she's kept me injury-free since she's been around. Prior to her, I was getting injured a lot. It seemed like every month I was having something else that was pretty severe, pretty rough, and it was holding me out, and I couldn't go live like you were saying. I had to let my body drill and heal. But ever since then, she's helped a lot. Also, I mean, obviously getting the hot tub, we got that towards the end of summer. That was a huge beneficial thing to have. But the hot tub and Jesse have really kept me healthy. And then, of course, CBD. That's
yeah, man. Big thing I do is cold therapy. I forgot about the cold therapy. Take cold showers in the morning.
And, I don't do that. That's
occasionally
terrible.
Take ice baths. Man, I think it really just helps me, like, The biggest reason why I do it is for motivation. You know, when I get up in the morning, I take my regular shower, and then at the very end, I turn it as cold as it goes and stand under it for 30 seconds to a minute. And it's just invigorating, and I feel like it's kind of like a lesser version of cryotherapy where it kind of concentrates your blood in your core and then recirculates it out so you have better
And you do that every day? That's not like a fight camp thing? Or
not every day.
Okay.
You know, having a baby and, you know, being on his schedule, it's not always something that I can do right when I wake up, but it's something I prefer to do and I like to do every day.
Gotcha. Does your body ever get used to that? Like, are you used to the cold now, or is it still just as shocking as it was when you first started?
Oh, no, you totally get used to it. And what's the coolest thing is if you look into Wim Hof's methods, you can actually...
That's his name. I forgot his name.
Yeah, you can... I know it sounds crazy. Please do your research because... I can't actually tell you studies, but you can kind of influence your autonomous nervous system to mm-hmm. where you can control it to in a sense. So like, you know, before when the cold water would hit me, I'd be like, ah, and then I'd kind of, my breathing would be rapid and it would take me a second to bring myself back. But now through breathing techniques, deep breathing, when it happens, I don't even feel cold. And my heart rate doesn't spike.
Really?
And my breathing doesn't change. Even like the other day when I posted that video jumping into the lake that was still frozen.
Mm-hmm.
That was cold, man. It was actually colder than I thought it was going to be. But I got in there and you take a couple deep breaths and you're like, this isn't that bad. Like,
really?
You feel like you can control your core temperature and it doesn't fluctuate through, you know, when you're doing those breathing exercises. And I can't tell you the science behind it, but I can tell you that it does seem to work for me. I think it's a, you know, people say there's power in meditation and breathing. Mm-hmm. And I think when it comes to cold therapy, there really is.
Okay, so if I were to start doing this, odds are against it. Does it matter if I do it before my shower or at the end? Does it matter like a time frame, or is it as long as I do it?
Well, so I think the easiest way to do it is, so take your regular shower, mm-hmm. and then at the very end, turn it cold. And to start, I would do 10 seconds, just 10 seconds. Okay. Doesn't sound like much, but it's going to shock your body. It really will. And then do that for a couple days, maybe a week, and increase it to 20 seconds or 30 seconds, even just 15 seconds, even that, wow. you know, and slowly increase it over time. And then once your body gets used to it, once you get into the rhythm of those deep breathing exercises and you know, like, hey, if I take this many breaths at this pace, then when I get in this cold water, it's not going to shock my system. Then you can do it pretty much all the time. Hmm. But it takes building up to that. And me and my buddy Dylan Chandler, we actually did Wim Hof's cold shower challenge. I want to say it was 2 years ago now, and he had us, you know, for 30 days, every week we would increase the amount of time that we spent in there. And okay. that's how I started this whole thing. And now I just do it for enjoyment and benefits.
All right. So I got another weird question, kind of particular here. But so when you're in this cold shower, do you let it like hit your head and run down, or does it hit your chest, or do you turn around and let it on your back? Like, does it matter? I know it's kind of weird and particular.
Honestly, I don't really know if it matters, okay. but what I do personally is the first thing I do is I submerge my head and try to let it run over my whole body.
Okay.
And then I usually turn around and let it run on my back mainly, and then I'll get all my limbs, you know, and okay. then I'll turn around and let it run on my chest, because really I'm trying to make it cold to where I'm concentrating all my blood in my core. That way, when I get out, it recirculates, and I get better circulation that way.
It's a smart idea.
But really, you get the most benefits when you can fully submerge yourself in, like, an ice bath.
Yeah.
Or, like, jumping into a frozen lake or whatever it is. And the thing is, it doesn't have to be crazy cold. They say that you get the same benefits in, like, 50-degree water that you do in water that's colder than that. I like the really cold water for the mental aspect of it, and for the fact that it forces you to breathe, because if you're not deep breathing, then your body is going to start shivering and you're going to start feeling cold.
Wow.
But yeah, that's just my experience with it.
Damn. Jeez. All right. Well,
I like the mental aspect of it, man. It makes you tough, and it makes you realize, like, you know, that in all elements that you can survive.
I might have to add that to my game, because everything I do revolves around, like, mental warfare and mental toughness, like through training, running without headphones, things like that. It's a nightmare. So I might have to try this cold shower thing. It doesn't sound appealing.
Yeah, do it. Let's talk about running with no headphones. Like,
I feel like a psychopath. Yeah, it's terrible, but it makes you feel... I think people rely on their music more than they realize they do when they listen, when they run. You dig deep, let's listen to the beat and run with it. I got to push this last mile, you know what I mean? And then, whereas without headphones, you of course don't have that. And when you fight, you don't have that. Yeah, you have the crowd sometimes, but also sometimes the crowd gets kind of quiet and I don't have to rely on crowd noise to get my juices flowing.
Right.
So when you run, you feel every ache and every pain because you don't have anything to dive into aside from feeling the pain. So you feel every step, every bump in the road, you hear the noises, you hear the cars, you hear everything, and it makes you fully in the moment, like we were talking about earlier, and there's no way to escape the pain. Or I don't like running as it is. Like, yeah. I'm not a runner. And so it makes me really embrace the suck, and I force myself to do it. And then when it comes time for the fight, say we're in the third round, the other guy may not realize it, but he needs the music to carry on, and I don't. I'm mentally ready to go for as long as I need to, because I don't need music. I don't need anything to motivate me. I'm self-motivated at that point.
You sound like David Goggins out here embracing the suck.
I've been told that before, actually.
Yeah. I mean, there's been multiple people that have been pretty successful and do hardcore things, mm-hmm. that when I talk to them, I always ask them for their advice, and one thing they always say is be uncomfortable more.
Uncomfortable being uncomfortable is one of my favorite things. Yeah.
I think that's a big thing that jiu-jitsu does. It makes you comfortable being uncomfortable.
Absolutely.
You know, when you're getting suffocated, when you're getting pressured on top, especially, you know, me being a smaller guy, I mean, people smash and then you're getting choked and everything else, you're claustrophobic.
It is weird how you grow in that aspect, because not that I've ever had that, but having someone smother me 3 years ago, I'd hated it.
Yeah.
Although I wrestled my whole life. It's just not comfortable having someone on top of you. Yeah. And now tonight, like, you and I were rolling and I didn't really have any issues with it. Of course, that's a 3-year journey I've been a part of now.
Yeah.
But just embracing the suck, understanding that I might get choked here.
Yeah.
I'm going to have someone smother me. I mean, to be fair, we're kind of weird. Like, we bleed and sweat and roll around with each other. But
aggressive cuddling, you know. That's
aggressive. Involuntary yoga.
Yeah.
So,
you know, bending up like a pretzel, different passes and everything else like that. But going back to this running without headphones. Mm-hmm. So you talked about being in the moment and like feeling every ache and every pain in your body and whatnot. Do you ever try to like get in your head and distract yourself, or do you just kind of?
Of course I do, but you can only really do that for so long.
Yeah.
I mean, of course I'm like, okay, cool. I only have a mile and a half left to push, or two miles, whatever it may be. And of course I distract myself, whether it's looking at the nature as I run through a trail, or my favorite way to distract myself is just get in my head and think about the fight.
Yeah, that's think what about, I do.
Yeah, I try to envision the fight and how it's going to go. And before long, I've went farther than I thought I had.
Yeah.
And I almost kind of zone out.
Yeah.
And but then once you come to and you stop thinking about it, you feel all the pain in your legs and every step starts to suck. And so it really makes you think about the fight, because that's, and of course that's what you're training for anyways. I don't run when it's not fight camps. So I'm running for the fight and to get my weight down and all that. So it definitely helps, but it doesn't, still in the back of your mind, you feel everything. It's not like you can completely avoid pain. You don't have anything to truly dive into.
Yeah. When I run, again, I really only run when I'm in a fight camp, because I also hate running and I got a couple bad knees, but that's besides the point. But when you're running, like you said, you try to think about the fight, think about the things you're going to do, your fight camp, everything else like that. You can only do that for so long.
Absolutely.
And then when it does start to suck again, I always try to give myself positive affirmations, like, hey, like, I'm going to be a world champion. Like,
absolutely.
I'm going to win this fight.
Definitely.
And I think those positive affirmations also help me keep pushing and get into that mindset where I can, you know, embrace the suck even more.
I think doing that truly, it makes you believe in yourself more, because if I come back after round one and I'm like, well, shit, I know I just lost that round. That wasn't good. I know that I have the mental capability to keep pushing forward. And if my mind can do it, of course, my body's going to follow. And so I think that's a big way to help motivate yourself, even during fights. Because, of course, we've all had rounds where they don't go our way.
Yeah.
But if you can come back to the corner and say, I've embraced the suck, I think his cardio's bursted, I'm going to beat him now, or I don't think he has the mental capability to push as far as I can, then it re-motivates you, and the second round's a whole new fight then.
Yeah, you can adapt and overcome.
Absolutely.
And really, the power of belief is something that, if you think about it, it's one of the most studied things in the world. Simply think about the placebo effect.
Yes.
If you believe in something, then your body reacts and it works. Even if you're taking a placebo and it's not meant to work, we know that placebos often work because we believe in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the power of belief is something that I don't think we really understand fully, but we know it works. If we can figure out ways to push ourselves and make sure that we believe in ourselves and believe in what we're doing and believe in our purpose, then that's what really drives us and allows us to succeed.
At the end of the day, it's the self-motivation. I think the discipline drives the self-motivation at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So the more you push yourself to do things, and for me, I cut a crazy amount of weight, and so I know that there's no possible way when I look across the cage that the guy's put in as much work as I have because I have such a crazy diet. Like I usually start my cuts at 195, and then I make 55 within a 6 to 8 week span. It's crazy, but I can't do that just off pure diet and one practice a day.
Right.
I have to run, I have to go lift, and then I have a striking coach, and then I have a jiu-jitsu class. Like I'm putting in 4 or 5 classes a day, workouts, I shouldn't say classes, and there's no way that they're doing that. So I think at the end of the day, they can't keep up with me. And yeah. So that's a huge mental thing for me too.
Yeah, and I think when you're in a fight camp, the simple pleasures of life kind of go away.
Absolutely.
And you're acting more on like existential pleasures,
mm-hmm.
and like knowing that when you hit a goal, you feel good about it, and you have like the greater picture in mind, and you're not just looking at like, man, that cheeseburger looks good. I'd dive into it and be like, oh, this feels so good to
yeah.
eat, you know?
To be
like,
fair, I will always eat a cheeseburger.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
Sometimes, I hate it when people eat good food around me and I'm
sometimes
dieting.
You gotta indulge, man. And like, mm-hmm. I'm one of those guys that I don't cut a ton of weight. I don't
yeah.
like to cut weight. I think if I go in there more hydrated than the other guy, then, you know, even if he's a little bit bigger than me, I'll have an advantage in the cardio yeah. aspect and that. So I usually walk around between 145 and 150, and I fight at 35. You know, that's only 10 to 15 pounds, which
yeah.
might sound like a lot to other people, but in the fight game, that's not too much.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, it is.
Yeah, but what's the grand scheme of percentages?
Right, like overall percentage of my body yeah. weight, yeah. True, but still, it's not the same as you
absolutely.
Cutting from
yeah.
195 to 155.
Yeah. I like the thought of my bigger frame, especially because I love the ground game. And so when I'm on the ground,
right.
if I can smother people, that's
yeah.
where I like to be.
Yeah, and you know, I think I could definitely make 125. There's no doubt about that.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think I would enjoy the process. Granted, weight cutting sucks as it is, and
absolute
even
worst.
Cutting 10, 15 pounds is terrible. But adding that extra 10 pounds, that changes the game. And you know, I'm trying to be more technical in this fight, but
mm-hmm.
I also know that if it comes down to a dogfight, then I have the advantage. And I think I'd be afraid that if I went down to 25, it'd kind of take away my chin and leave me more open to, you know, be more susceptible to damage and things like that.
Yeah.
So I think 135 is where I'm going to stay for now. Maybe when I make the jump to pro, we'll think about other things. And really, I think having a personal trainer for this fight camp, it'll really allow me to see what my body's capable of,
mm-hmm.
see how that influence, like how the nutrition and all of that influences my overall body composition.
We're going to have to talk about that on one of the next
yeah.
few. Okay, so prior to pre-coach, what did you do? Like, what did you try to get your weight down to before you start cutting water out and sitting in saunas to give yourself PTSD?
Well, man, I used to not cut weight the most healthy way, and I would be like 150 to 155, and then I would, you know, I typically was pretty consistent at lifting weights early in
mm-hmm.
my fight career just because I enjoyed it. That's what I did. When the fights got closer, I would train more. Reduce my calories, and I'd also start running
mm-hmm.
because running is a low base aerobic exercise, so you're more likely to burn fat doing that than other things.
Gotcha.
Especially when you're in a fasted state. So I often did did my low base cardio in a fasted state to influence my fat burning.
Mm-hmm.
But I would, you know, cut to lose some weight, diet down to 145, and then after that it'd be water, man, and I'd do some hot yoga.
See, at that weight, you're cutting more water than I am.
Right,
and
that was that
huge,
was just
that's huge.
That was just something that I couldn't keep doing, and I knew that. And you know, I think one of my fights, I got kind of sick, so I couldn't. I didn't stay on my diet as well, and I couldn't train, so that influenced how much calories I was burning.
Mm-hmm.
So then that weight cut was terrible.
Yeah.
But you know, with every fight, I think my weight cut's gotten better. And man, for my last fight, I only cut a couple pounds of water, and I didn't sit in the sauna a single time. I did one tub cut, and that was it.
Wow.
I got down to 142 after practice. After like my last practice, I was at 142, just by diet and manipulating
my
water intake. And then I'd floated off a couple pounds and really only cut like 5 pounds in water. And that's really been the norm for my past few fights. And
mm-hmm.
I like that. I feel like, you know, cutting 7 to 10 pounds, that just wasn't in water. That just wasn't something that was healthy for me.
Absolutely.
So.
Yeah. I try to get to like 68 or so, and then I'll cut from there. Sometimes I'm a couple pounds higher, a couple pounds lower, of course, but my
yeah.
goal is usually 68, and then I'll cut about 12 to 13 in water.
Yeah.
But I also come and fight at almost 180. So right. I put on a crazy amount of weight overnight.
See, I don't put on a whole lot. I usually put on 7 to 10 pounds, but really that's okay. That's okay with me. Like I said, I've been dieting down and really focusing on my strength and conditioning and everything else like that previously, to where I wasn't cutting a lot of water. And now I'm going into this fight camp with a personal trainer. He's going to be doing my nutrition and everything else like that. So
that's great.
That's one less thing that I personally have to think about and manage for myself. And I'm just really looking forward to being able to show up at the gym and just do what I'm told and be in the moment and not have to think on my way there like, okay, is my program written out well? Like, am I going to be able to do all of these things that I want to do today? Do I have the time to do all of this? Am I going to be able to balance this with my training properly? And, you know, I have a decent amount of knowledge there, but I'm not a personal trainer.
Absolutely.
I don't have a, you know, a science background in physiology or anything like that. So that, you know, my thing... My programs were good to the best of my abilities, but I'm just really excited to work with a professional and just be able to go in there and not have to worry and be anxious about making sure I'm doing all the right things and just be there and do what they tell me to do. One less thing to think
about.
That
sounds great. Working with a nutritionist is definitely a game changer.
Yeah, yeah. For sure. Absolutely changes the game. 'Cause there was, you know... A big thing that fighters do to cut weight is they cut out all the carbs. But once you start cutting out all your carbs, then you lose the energy that you need to train. And sure, you know, with all these paleo and keto diets and whatnot, where people aren't eating carbs and their bodies are running on fat, like that's great for the average person. But when it comes to high intense training like we're doing, our body is pulling from those carb sources, and it's not going to function in its optimal state by pulling from fat sources. So carbs are so necessary when we train, and so often people eliminate those to cut weight. So then you think, okay, yeah, you're cutting more weight, you might be bigger than the next guy, but you haven't been able to train to the best of your abilities because you're not fueling your body the way that you need to. So that's been another big thing of like why I like to stay at 135 instead of 25 is because I don't have to cut out my carbs as early. And sure, you know, when you're manipulating your water intake and cutting water weight, you know, cutting out carbs reduces your glycogen, thus reducing the amount of water that your muscles hold, so you can lose water that way. But being able to eat carbs, like for my last fight, I ate carbs leading all the way up until my fight and still made weight and cut minimal water. It felt great. And like, you know, not that I felt shredded, and honestly, I looked pretty shredded. I looked more cut up in that fight with a less percent body fat than I have in all my other fights before, and that's because I dialed in my nutrition. And now I'm working with a professional, not just off my knowledge, but his knowledge. So I'm just super excited to see how it all works out.
Yeah, I can vouch for that no-carb thing. I did a fight or two like that. Weight was a little heavier. I had a couple guys that weren't as knowledgeable as I thought they might be, and I listened to them, and those were the worst I've absolutely felt during a fight. You cannot, with how much I cut trying to do that, I could not recover without having those maximum carbs back in me. So just eating a couple plates of spaghetti or lasagna, it wasn't enough to restock my carbs I had lost over 6-7 weeks.
Right.
I felt terrible.
Yeah.
By the end of the first, I usually have a really good gas tank, and by the end of the first, my body was drained, my cardio was gone, I was done. I hated it.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is it just affects your performance so much that people think like, oh man, the more weight I can cut, the better I'm going to be. But that's not always the case. Take Anthony Smith, for example, fighting at 205 against John Jones. He was a 185er for the longest time. And then he moved up to 205 and realized like, wow, he can do so much more at that weight because he's not focused on the weight cut. You know, like sometimes you get into a fight camp and fighters are more focused on the weight cut than they are training, and that's not how it's supposed to be.
Yeah, definitely. So speaking of that UFC card that just came up, we'll kind of start to close this out. What'd you think about the Askren-Lawler fight?
Man, I actually didn't get to watch the pay-per-view, but I did see the highlights, and I did see the finish. You know, that I think that puts the referee in a tough spot.
Definitely.
But I think Herb Dean did his job. You know, his job is to look out for the fighters. And if you look at Robbie Lawler, his arm did fall limp. And, you know, from a different angle, people did say he was given a thumbs up. So, you know, it's hard to say.
But his hand did go limp. So at the time, the immediate reaction from the ref is to keep the safety in mind, and so definitely.
And I saw a video that Hensel Gracie put out about the bulldog choke itself, and people were saying that Robbie had his chin tucked, and that when you have your chin tucked, you're not going to get put to sleep. But that's the furthest from the truth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're talking about blood chokes like that choke, even if your chin's tucked, you're still getting the arteries on the sides of your neck cut off, and that's cutting off the blood supply to your brain, so you're gonna go to sleep at a certain point. So when Herb Dean saw Robbie Lawler's arm go limp, whether it went limp or not, I don't know. I wasn't there.
In real time, I think it was a good call, of course.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just, you're put in a tough spot when guys don't want to tap, and that's just how it goes. You know, they've been talking about a rematch. I don't think Askren really wants that.
But, he got dropped on his head hard.
Yeah, but I wouldn't want to fight Robbie Lawler either. That dude's an animal. But I think he took it the way that a true, you know, champ takes it. Mm-hmm. And he realized that it's part of the game and it happens.
Yeah, his name solidified. That one loss doesn't define who he is.
Yeah, it doesn't make a difference in his legacy.
Yeah.
Not at all.
It's not a huge deal.
What would you like to see? Who would you like to see Ben Askren fight next?
Oh, I don't even have any idea. I eventually hope he fights Khabib. I want to see that fight pretty bad. I think the ground games might be kind of interesting. Neither one have a strong stand-up game.
Yeah, I don't want to say they're terrible at striking because they'd probably kick my ass. But, but as far as technical striking goes, it's not to the level of their ground game. So, you know, with fights like that, you wonder, like, would their ground games kind of cancel each other out? Would it be a fight on the feet?
I think that'd be an ugly fight if it stayed on the feet.
I don't think it would. I think with those guys, they're going to grapple regardless. But,
I'm excited about Ben being in the UFC, though. I like him a lot.
Yeah, he's a character, man. He keeps things light. He keeps it funny. It's finally good to see him because he's always been at the top of the sport but never been able to test himself against guys in the UFC. So it's good that him and Dana could squash that beef and, you know.
I wouldn't say it's completely squashed.
No,
but enough
to get him here. Sad to see Demetrius go, but
definitely.
That's how it goes.
Yep. You have any plans leading up to before you start your fight camp and start making all these sacrifices?
No, not really, man. I'm really just trying to focus on training consistently and, you know, I still make sure that I'm able to live my life. You know, I try to go on hikes and, you know, when I do, even though I sacrifice a lot of time training, when I do get home from training or when I'm not training, I'm always spending time with my baby.
Yep.
That little dude is 6 months old today, and
that's fantastic. He's perfectly healthy.
He's a bundle of joy, man, and just watching him grow is incredible.
Yeah.
I love spending time with him. I love spending time with my girl. She's building a business right now, so making sure I give her the time to do all of that. So, you know, I don't have a whole lot of time to do a lot of, you know, random, spontaneous, crazy things, but I'm doing the things that I want to do. And
I feel like I live like an old person.
Hey, man, we go, we train, we eat, we spend time with our families, and we do it all over again. But that's
absolutely
what we love to do.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. About the same. Blessed to have them around.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll wrap things up.
Yeah, for sure. Before we get kicked off and forget anything, I just want to say thanks to Seth for being our sound guy, letting us use his studio and everything in his house. You're incredible, man. And then Appleton Imaging, who is our main sponsor right now. Go follow him on Instagram, add him on Facebook. It's at Appleton Imaging. It's easy to find. The guy's the man. He can basically do it all.
Does incredible photography, whether it's weddings, sports photography, senior pictures, really anything, man. If you see any of our pictures on Instagram, most of the time he took them, and they look incredible.
He makes me look way better than I am.
Yeah, man. Also, if you wouldn't mind, follow us on Instagram, @OutsideTheOctagon_, and like us on Facebook @OutsideTheOctagon. And we're look forward to doing more podcasts and seeing how this thing goes.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for tuning in.